First of all, I wanted us to know where the geography of where this took place and who the woman might be, because it's a very small encounter and a very small number of verses that we even have in the Bible about this. So I found out that the Syrophoenician or Canaanite woman, because there are two different references to that in the two Gospels. One says the Canaanite woman, the other one says Syrophoenician.
So she's a...
Well, I'm going to explain. I'm going to tell you. Now,
good.
Was an unidentified woman from the region of Tyre and Sidon. It is unclear as exactly who she was racially, although she is non-Jewish and Mark states that she was Greek. The Greeks call this area Phoenicia, and Mark calls her Syrophoenician, whereas Matthew calls her a Canaanite. And Canaan is what the Jews call this area. The area she lived in made her an inhabitant of Phoenicia or Canaan, where it was part of the Roman province of Syria. And I've got now this one thing that I've now got to let you see, which is that we come down here and I've got the next slide, hopefully, which is the biblical map of that area in the time of Jesus, or in biblical times. And you can see up out of Israel, up where it says Phoenician states, you can see Sidon and Tyre up there. So that's an old map. And then to have a look to see what it looks like today, I've got another slide just to let you see that. So I'll go to the next one. So that is where it is today, and you can see that now Tyre and Sidon are sort of in the area that's Lebanon. So that, and this, yeah, so that's where it was. So a Syrophoenician Canaanite was a native or inhabitant of the area of ancient Palestine, west of the River Jordan on the eastern shores of the Mediterranean Sea. Canaan occupied the same area that is occupied by modern Lebanon and Israel, plus parts of Jordan and Syria. They were descendants of Noah's grandson Canaan, who was a son of Ham. The land of Canaan was the land God promised to give Abraham's descendants. So, knowing that it's what Jews would have been looking forward to having. Now, I thought we might just read, and I've given those two readings from the Gospels to different readers. If we can have the person I got to do the Matthew, because they're very short readings. In a very short amount of time. Who's got the Matthew one?
I have.
Okay, can you start with that then?
Okay. It's Matthew 15, verses 21 to 28. Then Jesus went out from there and departed to the region of Tyre and Sidon. Behold, a woman of Canaan from that region had cried out to him, saying, "Mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David, my daughter is severely demon-possessed." But he answered her not a word. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away, for she cries out after us." But he answered and said, "I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." Then she came and worshipped him, saying, "Lord, help me." But he answered and said, "It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs." And she said, "Yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table." Then Jesus answered her and said, "O woman, great is your faith. Let it be to you as you desire." And her daughter was healed from that very hour.
Okay, thanks, Shirley. Now, could we have the person who was given the Mark reading? So, yeah, thanks, Lois.
It's Mark 7:24-30.
Just to, 24-30.
From there he arose and went to the region of Tyre and Sidon, and he entered a house and wanted no one to know it, but he could not be hidden. For a woman whose young daughter had an unclean spirit heard about him, and she came and fell at his feet. And the woman was a Greek, a Syrophoenician by birth. And she kept asking him to cast the demon out of her daughter. But Jesus said to her, "Let the little children be filled first, for it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs." And she answered and said to him, "Yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs under the table eat from the children's crumbs." Then he said to her, "For this saying, go your way, the demon has gone out of your daughter." And when she had come to her house, she found the demon had gone out, and her daughter lying on the bed.
Thanks, Lois. All right, so you've got the two accounts. As you heard, they're both quite short, and the bubbling goes on into it, the other things, and so we don't know anything much about this woman at all. So I'm going back to talk about Tyre. So Tyre today is considered an idyllic, white-sanded coastal getaway on the Mediterranean coast of southern Lebanon. It is considered as an antique town that reigned over the seas and founded prosperous colonies such as Cadiz and Carthage. Well, Cadiz is Spain. So in its heyday, it went all over the Mediterranean. So that's interesting. Modern Tyre is known as Sur in Arabic, and Europa, the sister of a king of Tyre, was where the name for the continent of Europe came. Tyre is 19 kilometres north from the modern border with Israel. There was a Tyrian alliance and trade agreement with David, king of Israel, initiated by the king of Tyre. In David's time, Israel dominated the inland trade routes to Tyre. Tyre was dependent on Israelite agriculture for much of its food. Tyre supplied Israel with timber from the cedars of Lebanon, as well as other commodities. And if you read, or can read, in 2 Samuel 5 verse 11, it says, "Now Hiram, king of Tyre, sent envoys to David, along with cedar logs, and carpenters, and stonemasons, and they built a palace for David."
Yes.
And then in 1 Kings 9, in verses 10 to 11, it says, "At the end of 20 years, during which Solomon built these two buildings, the temple of the Lord and the royal palace, King Solomon gave 20 towns in Galilee to Hiram, king of Tyre, because Hiram had supplied him with all the cedar and juniper and gold he wanted." So for years there had been some connections with Tyre. So I'm thinking, well, this is interesting, because why do we get a reference to this encounter with this woman that's so small, but does it have importance because of the message for the people that were with Jesus, and a message, of course, for us? So here is a picture now of modern Sidon, and then I've got some of modern Tyre. So these are showing some of the ancient ruins that are there, and then this modern city's gone up and still there today. And I've found that Sidon is considered the third largest city in today's Lebanon. It is on the Mediterranean coast, as we can see, and is 40 kilometres north of Tyre and 40 kilometres south of Beirut. And then I've got now some pictures of Tyre rather than Sidon. So there's ruins there of Tyre, modern Tyre, this white, idyllic, sandy beach in Tyre. So,
I was thinking nice for a holiday.
Yeah, well, I think that's where people go. Mind you, I mean, Lebanon's always dicey.
Yeah,
more than
might be your last holiday.
Close to Syria, so, yeah, you wonder.
If you get enough taxis, as I do, talk to the drivers, I'll tell you all about Lebanon.
They will. Now, and I've also got these. Now, this is the Cedars of Lebanon.
Yeah.
Some years ago, when we did go, before a lot of trouble happened, we went to Lebanon and to Beirut, and it was coastal. And then I said to this taxi driver there, I want to see the Cedars of Lebanon. And we went up, and so these trees, and obviously a huge trade in timber was done.
The size of the tree.
Yeah. So the ancient Phoenicians were known by the ancient Greeks as the Purple People, and trade from this important coastal trading port extended to Israel and northern Syria, and in a trading venture with Israel even went as far as Sudan and Somalia. Tyre had grown wealthy from her industries of purple-dyed textiles, and was conquered by King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon and Alexander the Great. The colour purple was the mark of royal rank. 1 gram of pure purple dye was worth 10 or 20 grams of gold. The ancient Tyrians extracted the dye from the murex, a marine snail that still lives along Tyre's shores, deep among the rocks and sunken archaeological remains. Tyre and the whole of ancient Syria fell under Roman rule in 64 BC. In 1979, Tyre was declared a World Heritage Site by UNESCO. And then I've got now a picture of this purple dye from this sea snail. And there's this purple dye extracted and becomes this cloth. So I've given you all this background because it's to lead into why I think, you know, well, who's this woman? So Jesus' encounter with the Syrophoenician woman takes place not long after he had been arguing with a group of Pharisees and elders. They had been critical of the disciples not obeying the eating regulations of the law. Jesus pointed out at this time that what went into a person didn't defile them, but what came from their heart and thence out of their mouth defiled them. So Jesus and his disciples, having had this encounter with the Pharisees and talking to them, and then Jesus decides that they're going to leave where they were and make their way down to the coast, down to this area of Tyre and Sidon. And Jesus, Lord said, they attempted to stay in a place where Jesus could be alone and unknown. Just as that, we don't know, does Jesus need a rest? Does Jesus want to talk more with his disciples on their own? It doesn't say. So we don't know. So we then read quite quickly, remaining alone and undisturbed didn't happen. For this woman from the area, who had a daughter who was ill, approached Jesus. Mark's gospel says she fell at his feet. Matthew's gospel records that the woman approached Jesus and the disciples. She followed after them, continually crying out. To this point, Jesus said nothing to her. The disciples then moved up to Jesus, requesting that Jesus send her away. What would Jesus do? What were they about to witness? What were they about to learn? So it then says that what is interesting and about this woman was the woman was calling out to Jesus, Lord, Son of David. have mercy on me. My daughter is demon-possessed and suffering terribly. But the interesting thing is that she calls out, Lord, Son of David, because that is important, because this is a pagan woman who is showing recognition of Jesus' messianic claims, because he, Lord, Son of David, was a popular Jewish title for the coming Messiah. Jesus' genealogy fulfills the Davidic covenant, Son of David, Son of Abraham. And for the Jews, it was important for them to recognise Jesus in that way. So then we can look at what had Isaiah predicted about the Messianic age. So what does this woman, desperately concerned about her daughter's health, understand about Jesus? So could we have you, Kerry, read that Isaiah 35, because it's really a lovely chapter that's about the Messianic age.
Isaiah 35. The wilderness and the dry land shall be glad. The desert shall rejoice and blossom. Like the crocus, it shall blossom abundantly and rejoice with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given to it, the majesty of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of the Lord, the majesty of our God. Strengthen the weak hands and make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance. He will recompense. With the recompense of God, he will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap like a hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing for joy. For waters shall break forth in the wilderness, and streams in the desert. The burning sand shall become a pool, and the thirsty ground springs of water. The haunt of jackals shall become a swamp, the grass shall become reeds and rushes. And a highway shall be there, and it shall be called the Holy Way. The unclean shall not pass over it, and fools shall not err therein. No lion shall be there, nor shall any ravenous beast come up on it. They shall not be found there, but the redeemed shall walk there. And the ransomed of the Lord shall return, and come to Zion with singing. Everlasting joy shall be upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away.
I know, it's a really beautiful picture, and you have to think, what does this woman know that she would be calling Jesus the Messiah, or greeting him with that greeting, and what does she know perhaps about what the Messianic age would be like?
Do you have a print up on that?
No.
Sorry. Can I photograph it?
Yeah, sure. Jesus speaks to the woman and says, I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. Jesus is stating that as the Messiah sent from God, his purpose was to redeem the house of Israel. Nevertheless, this woman continues to approach Jesus and kneels before him and says, Lord, help me. Here is the grace of salvation in action. Recognise the authority of God and his Son. Now know our own helplessness and in humility ask for help. In Luke's Gospel, in chapter 23, verse 40, the account of the thief on the cross who says to the other criminal, don't you fear God, we are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. Then the thief continues, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. We know how Jesus replied to that thief on the cross. To the woman, Jesus makes this statement, And he doesn't ask a question. It's a statement. And he says, it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs. I know the versions we had, it was little dogs. They were, in the commentaries, there were obviously people concerned about the fact that Jesus had spoken so rudely almost to this woman. And it was interesting because when I was doing the slideshow and getting the kids to help me, the little one, Sam's little boy, Alex, said, Jesus wouldn't speak like that. This is interesting because Jesus did say those words. But Jesus was totally aware of the laws of God that had been given by God to Moses, who in turn delivered those laws to Israel. In Deuteronomy 10, Moses told Israel in verse 15, yet the Lord set his affection on your ancestors and loved them, and he chose you, their descendants, above all nations as it is today. But then in verse 18 it says, he defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow and loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing. And in verse 19 it also says, and you are to love those who are foreigners, for you yourselves were foreigners in Egypt. So Jesus speaks metaphorically to the woman. His words are actually stating that this woman is not from the household of Israel and is outside the boundary of those to whom he had come to reveal his calling. However, Jesus would know from his own amazing knowledge of the scriptures what provision God had made for all those who came to reside and be part of a Jewish household. So this woman is not silenced and defeated by Jesus' words. She answers Jesus with a continuation of the metaphor. And this is how she says in Matthew, yes, it is, Lord. So your statement is right. Yes, it is, Lord. Even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. So in any household, the owner's pets are allowed to eat scraps from the master. This woman is still calling Jesus Lord. So she's still acknowledging who Jesus is. And so we then see that at this meeting and in this recording, in the Gospels, this is the first time that anyone has called Jesus Lord. So once again, that's significant, that here's this pagan woman who actually calls him Lord and continues to address him as Lord. And we know Jesus knows if she is acknowledging that he is Lord, then as the Jewish rule was, you help those people. So her words may well have indicated to Jesus that she acknowledged God and the household of faith, and thus he was her master. And as we've read, respect, kindness and provision of care was part of the Mosaic code for any who were guests or part of the household. And I, on the basis of that comment from that woman, there's nothing more said other than, woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted. And her daughter was healed at that moment. So, from the two short accounts in Matthew and Mark of the meeting with the woman, nothing more is recorded. Short though it is, the encounter with the Syrophoenician woman has points for us to ponder, even though they are speculations. I think even for the disciples who've just heard Jesus arguing and saying, you're not going to be defiled by what goes into you, it's what comes out of your mouth. And then the next encounter is a woman who's calling to him for help. And so he is responding with what is coming out of her mouth, because out of her mouth she's acknowledging messianic person and calls him Lord. As well as that, we've got that Tyre and Sidon were great trading cities. Trading cities are full of all kinds of people. There would be the entrepreneurs and dynastic families who amassed great wealth over many generations from trade. There would be the people who manufactured and sold the precious purple dye. There would be the timber merchants. There could be women who went to those cities to earn money by making themselves available to men from ships who were away from their wives. So you've got this whole huge thing to think about, and it happens in any trading city. Any port city, we have that sort of thing. Sydney, it was then in the ancient times, it's today. What goes on in trading cities? So then we could speculate. Was she from an old trading family that had been involved with Israel for generations? We don't know. And does she have some knowledge of Jewish beliefs and the God of Israel? We're not told. Had she merely heard of the healer who travelled about with his followers? Well, why did she address Jesus as son of David if that was just the case? Had someone spoken to her of his or her own religious convictions and beliefs? All the time you're thinking, how does she know? So, knowing the facts are obviously unimportant, but her demonstration of faith was. And there are always lessons for us about our own behaviour, as they were for the disciples. And I've got these points to think about. I think an important message is always to be ready to talk about what we believe. Someone has told this woman stuff. The other thing, always be mindful of our behaviour. As people pick up on our behaviour at all times, and store the tiniest impressions that we give them away in their minds. And I think it's always lovely if you meet somebody who, and it's always that degrees of separation, they'll say, oh, so what are you? And you say, oh, I'm a Christadelphian, it's my religion. And they'll say, oh, right, oh yeah. I met a Christadelphian. Oh, they're really lovely people. And you think, well, thank goodness for that. The other thing is, so you think it is so important for us all to know that we're always giving an impression. The next thing, sometimes, I think often women are like this, by feeling inadequate and ill-equipped, we don't realise how all of us can play a big part in preaching to others. It doesn't have to be a huge amount of knowledge. It can be just the way you behave. Whether you're kind. Whether you put yourself out for people. Whether you don't snap at people. So we only have to spread the seed. God, with his power and wisdom, he'll generate the increase. We don't know whether that woman had the healed daughter. You could speculate, is she from some amazing family? I wonder whether it's the healed daughter that ends up Lydia, seller of purple. It never says. How? It could be. We don't know. It's just, that's not important. But her behaviour and recognition was. And the person or people who spoke to her and told her stuff about the Bible, they were important too. So to remember that it was only a young servant girl who mentioned Elisha to her mistress, and then Naaman sought out Elisha, and that story proceeds. And very often it's the lowliest person in a household who knows what's going on. I remember often being told when you went to a school, if you wanted to get a bit of the background, have a chat to the cleaner.
Yes.
They all know. Yeah. And very often they've sussed it all out and can give you a pretty good lowdown on how things operate within a place. It's not often the big wigs. They don't know stuff. And, you know, now there's more female equality. But the glass ceiling is still sort of trying to be raised and broken. But I think, yes, women are often the people who know. So it's good to remember that. And it was an ex-prisoner and servant mentioned Joseph's name to Pharaoh. And think, yes, and then that got Joseph, you know, that plan unfold. And it was a young boy spoke up about his own small pack lunch and Jesus fed a multitude. And I think that's small steps is where it's all about, and, you know, great things can happen. So to start, finish it off, we can all be fishers of men and ambassadors for Christ.